all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information. Good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Common Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota. It's another beautiful day up north. If it's beautiful by sense of, you know, we're up north and therefore life is beautiful. The day itself, not so much. I mean, it was just a gross day on Sunday. And I really felt for everybody who was running the Eau Claire Marathon yesterday or anything that you had to do. But these kinds of weeks in spring are a rite of passage in Wisconsin. And we promise you, warmer weather is on the way. Less windy conditions are on the way. Not quite yet. It's 37 degrees here in Chippewa Falls, 33 in Green Bay, Wausau, and Wisconsin Rapids clocking in at 38. Light snow in Oshkosh and Green Bay, Oshkosh at 35, Waukesha at 34 degrees. It is Monday. It's the first day of May. It's great to have you along. Coming up on the program this morning, it is finally time for Wisconsin's version of the 49ers to go away. Not the San Francisco football team, but remember, the 49ers out there are named for the California Gold Rush of 1849. Doesn't that seem like ancient history to you? I mean, prospectors, mules, pickaxes, the lawlessness of the Old West. And yet, here in Wisconsin, women and their doctors are being ruled by an equally ancient abortion ban written in 1849. But this week, finally, oral arguments begin in court as State Attorney General Josh Call and others seek to have the ban struck down. We will explain what exactly are the legal arguments that are going to be made in court starting this week, and we will get more from that from one of the attorneys for one of the parties that is part of the case. So not Josh Call directly, but other parties known as interveners who are part of the case. One of their attorneys will get into the legal arguments of the case with us as well. We will have Dr. Kristen Lyerly coming up, one of those parties involved in the lawsuit. And sandwiched in between that, we're going to talk about the abortion case at 6:30 and 7:30. Sandwiched in between that, for the first half of our 7 o'clock hour, we will be joined by my friend, State Senator Jeff Smith, Democrat of the Eau Claire area. He's not really from Eau Claire. He's from the nearby town of Brunswick. He was town chair for 6 years before serving in the legislature. He knows a thing or two about town government and knows a thing or two between that and his state legislator duties about that thing called shared revenue. Again, the very unsexy name for a very important program where the state shares some of its massive tax revenue with local governments so that local governments don't have to jack our property taxes sky high. But Republicans have been picking and picking and picking and picking away at that and taking away more local control, basically trying to run everything on their own, no matter who you voted for at the local level. And so Senator Smith is going to outline what's been happening and what is this new Republican proposal, which they are framing as some kind of reform of shared revenue, but puts even more strings on some Wisconsin communities and does the financing in a way that's rather convoluted when it really doesn't have to be, you know, that convoluted. You could just, you know, fund local governments the way that they'd been done for decades and let local officials make local decisions and be accountable to their local voters. So we'll talk about that coming up at 7 o'clock. And then we'll wrap up the program with Civic Media News Director Terry Bell, who will tell us three things to know to start the week. We will also, coming up after the break here, review what's happening in some of the other states around the country. Some of it is good. Some of it is repulsive. We'll be covering anti-trans issues, gun safety, making it easier for working moms to run for office. We'll have an example of why our recent state Supreme Court election really mattered as we watch another state whose Supreme Court has gone in the opposite and far darker direction. All of it is designed, what we're doing today, to underscore a vital piece of Wisconsin sense. Every election matters, especially at the state level. And sometimes the best way to explain how valuable you are when it comes to voting is to show what can happen when you don't. Along the way, if you have comments on any of today's top stories, an opinion you want to share with a statewide audience on more than half a dozen radio stations across the Civic Media Radio Network, you can call us up at 844-967-2789, or you can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And of course, you can find Up North News, which is a separate entity from Civic Media, on social media at Up North News WI or upnorthnewswi.com. All of that very easy for me to say. All right, down to Madison we go, where we find one Aaron Zommers, who is joining us after a weekend. I mean, it was really gross yesterday, Aaron. What did you do on such a gross day?
It sure was gross. And I stayed inside and watched Star Wars with my roommate because...
It's Star Wars week.
Yeah, exactly. And currently, Return of the Jedi is in theaters for its 40th anniversary. So we just caught up and we watched Empire yesterday. So today or tomorrow, we're going to go watch Return of the Jedi in theaters.
Nice. And for folks who don't know, why is it Star Wars week?
May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be. So Thursday, it's all about, this is basically, it's party week or fiesta week, if you will, because Cinco de Mayo is on Friday. The Kentucky Derby is on Saturday. This is also Asian American Pacific Islanders Heritage Month. So there's no shortage of reasons to appreciate other cultures and other people and have a good time while you're doing it. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about who the Green Bay Packers chose in the NFL draft over the weekend. And we'll look ahead for the week for the Brewers and get into those state-by-state headlines, too. It's all coming up on a Monday here on Up North News Radio. I mean, look, everybody above a certain age was going to expect that song from the Association. But Aaron, I do have to ask if that song from the 60s has any resonance with you whatsoever, the song Windy.
I don't think I've ever heard it before, at least not to my knowledge.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. And they don't make songs about, you know, girls named Windy anymore, nor did they back then. Everybody, knows somebody named Wendy, but Windy fits so well in that one, but it worked. I mean, those wind gusts, 35 miles an hour for pretty much everybody. Some places got 40 miles an hour. I didn't dare put out the garbage can till early this morning, knowing what that was like out there. I'm sure you saw some things blowing past, like, really skinny freshmen on the UW campus or things like that.
Yeah, a couple of those, but they grabbed onto some light poles on the way over. They're fine.
Yeah, light post by light post, they managed to get here. The Up North News newsletter comes out every morning about 5 a.m. in your mailbox and has various Wisconsin features and links to news stories. Christina Laurie will be with us tomorrow for the Uplift, where she shares some of the uplifting stories that she's working on for us. And one of the stories in this morning's newsletter is an update on Kathleen Jensen's Little Heart Project. It started as a one-woman operation. It has slowly spread across several cities. They are little hearts that Jensen and now dozens of volunteers crochet. They attach notes to them, and they provide them around the state to encourage people who are dealing with mental health issues. And the project got a little extra publicity recently from Governor Evers and his Instagram feed. Also a link to the news coverage that we've had the past couple of days about the devastating cuts that would come to Wisconsin residents of all stripes through the debt ceiling bill that Republicans in the House of Representatives passed last week. It's not going to become law, of course, but it is still the kind of cuts that they want to see as they continue to hold the economy hostage. They're the ones who would collapse the economy in the short term and cause a recession by not approving the payment of bills that Congress has already authorized. This isn't new spending at all. And it frankly makes me, just wild to continue to hear national media play it as a both sides issue. Like, oh, Biden and the Congress, they're not seeing eye to eye on this. Yeah, because it's the Republicans in the House that are doing something wrong and threatening a recession to the economy. I'd love to see how the national media covered this, if the tables were turned and the headlines would be like, you know, how much more damage will Democrats do by threatening to crash the economy? But with the Republicans, it's kind of a both sides issue, and it's not like that at all. But again, if you have a comment on that, 844-967-2789 is the number here. All right, now let's get to sports at 6:18. On Friday, we mentioned that the NFL draft, it started on Thursday night, and that in the first round, the Packers didn't go for any new pass catchers for Jordan Love, choosing instead to beef up their pass rushing by taking Iowa's Lucas Van Ness. Well, the team ended up using a lot of their next picks for potential receivers for Love. They selected Oregon State tight end Luke Musgrave and Michigan State wide receiver Jaden Reed in the second round, South Dakota State tight end Tucker Kraft in the third round, then three more receivers in the second round, the fifth round, and the seventh round. The team drafted a kicker in the sixth round, leading to speculation that Mason Crosby, now a free agent, might not be coming back. And then the Packers also drafted two defensive linemen, a cornerback, a safety, a running back, and Penn State quarterback Sean Clifford, because now they need, you know, a new person as a backup now that Jordan Love is moving up to the starter position. So there will be a lot of new names to learn as a new era begins for the green and gold. Meanwhile, for the Milwaukee Brewers, they lost on Sunday. The LA Angels beat them 3-0. The bats were quiet again yesterday for the Brewers. However, the Brewers did take 2 out of 3 in the series by winning on Friday and Saturday. Now, Shohei Ohtani, just continuing to do Shohei Ohtani things, he hit a third-inning home run to center field that wasn't just a no-doubter. It was officially a record-breaking no-doubter. And I don't mean that it traveled farther than any home runs, but it sure traveled higher. This home run had a vertical of 162 feet above the field. It's the highest since StatCast began tracking that statistic in 2015. In other places, like I'm sure in Tampa and maybe the old Metrodome, probably would have hit the roof. Didn't at American Family Field this time. The Brewers are off today. They are traveling to Denver. Another Western road trip, 3 against the Rockies starting tomorrow, and then 3 more in San Francisco for the weekend. And as a reminder, along the Civic Media Radio Network, some of you get to hear the Brewers on our own stations. They include Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM and 1100 AM. And listeners can also catch the Brewers on WRCE News from the Center in Richland Center, 107.7 FM and 1450 AM. But back to Oshkosh Air Support, yours truly will be broadcasting from the Oshkosh area on Thursday and Friday. I don't know if it'll be the station there yet, because I believe there's still some work going on. So it might just be me on a street corner in Oshkosh with a cell phone and a microphone. But we'll see how that works out and talk to you from the Fox Valley come Thursday and Friday as I take care of some other business around the state as part of my duties for Up North News. All right, a reminder, Kristen Lyerly coming up in a few minutes, and then at 7:05, State Senator Jeff Smith, and at 7:30, we will have an attorney who talks about the abortion ban and the legal arguments that are going to be taking place this week, starting in Dane County Circuit Court, about the 1849 abortion ban. It's probably the top political issue in Wisconsin as people look around the 50 states. And there have just been so many noteworthy headlines that I thought worthy to share with you. Examples, again, of why state government matters, why state elections matter. They're the ones, I think, that get the least attention. You know, at least some people get really heavily involved in, like, their school board elections or things like that. Others, of course, know what's happening at the federal level with the president and senators and members of Congress. But it's at that state level, you know, when you're electing a governor and a legislature, that can really have an impact on your day-to-day life. Here are some examples. On the plus side, Colorado's governor signed 4 gun safety bills on Friday, raising the buying age for any gun from 18 to 21, just like alcohol, establishing a 3-day waiting period between the purchase and receipt of a gun, strengthening Colorado's red flag law, and allowing the firearms industry to be sued by the victims of gun violence. There's nothing there that is anti-Second Amendment. The right for law-abiding citizens to have, keep and bear arms is there. But this isn't about the Second Amendment. This is about second graders and keeping them alive and avoiding another horrific school shooting or that terrible mass shooting in Texas over the weekend where a neighbor, shot and killed, multiple members of the house next door because they asked him to stop firing his gun out in the yard because it was keeping a baby awake. And he responded by slaughtering the family. Turns out the family is, they are undocumented immigrants for the most part. At least one of them is a permanent resident. But the repulsive and white nationalist governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, put up a tweet about, the murder of five illegals or something along those lines. And, if you can't even at the time that, a 9-year-old boy is being gunned down by a neighbor, if the best you can say is to call him an illegal immigrant, not that I thought Texas Governor Greg Abbott had a soul, but, we just get more confirmation of the lack thereof. So when I hear again about, we should have the right to bear arms, apparently for Texas Governor Greg Abbott, that includes undocumented immigrants. Where's your line? Who do you oppose this time? Do you oppose gun safety or do you oppose undocumented immigrants? At some point, you're going to have to realize it's the guns, which is why in Colorado, the governor signed those bills that are going to save lives. In Michigan, on the positive side, you have lawmakers who have introduced a bill to make it easier for women to run for office, men as well, but this will predominantly benefit moms by allowing the use of campaign funds to pay for childcare. States set their own rules, and various states say what campaign funds can be used for. And in some cases, it can be used because, not everybody is of independent means. And if you can't work while you're running for office, then perhaps you can use some of your campaign funds for certain personal expenses, but then you got to play by the rules. And this bill would say that in Michigan, people who run for office could use campaign funds to pay for childcare, something that is legal for federal candidates in Michigan, but would be legal for state candidates as well. Now, on the negative side, you have North Carolina with a situation directly opposite that of Wisconsin, as far-right conservatives recently won control of their state Supreme Court. And as a result, they have made some new rulings on Friday. These politicians in justices' robes reversed progress on gerrymandering by declaring, falsely I might add, that they, the Supreme Court, had no authority to stop the Republican-controlled legislature from a partisan gerrymander, rigging the election maps to give Republican candidates a disproportionate share of the seats in the legislature compared to what the general public would actually give them with fair maps. They also said the legislature could go ahead and enact new voting restrictions that hit people of color the hardest. And that's, again, because the state Supreme Court election in North Carolina matters. Montana became the latest of at least 15 states to ban or restrict gender-affirming medical care for transgender kids when its Republican governor signed legislation that transgender lawmaker Zoe Zephyr said would leave blood on their hands. And instead of being introspective about the harm they're inflicting on kids, those legislators chose to ban Zoe Zephyr, a duly elected member of the body, from the floor. So they managed to assault human rights and democracy all with one bill. It's a very shameful period in Montana. Same with Iowa. We've outlined recently some of what that legislature's been voting on. But now let's turn back to things that might be a bit more positive. In Pennsylvania, Democrats are close to passing a bill, a very basic bill about people's rights, but it's been stalled there for 2 decades. It says employers cannot discriminate against an individual because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. But of course, Republican lawmakers used the debate over the bill to continue spreading lies about trans issues. And finally, in Florida, the governor there, Ron DeSantis, signed a new abortion ban recently, basically a total ban. It's called 6 weeks, but most people don't even know they're pregnant by 6 weeks. So it's a de facto total abortion ban. But there is a provision in the Florida Constitution put in there by voters decades ago that enshrines a right to privacy. And one of the conservative justices had once written a paper talking about its importance. And so those words may be used against that justice in helping reaffirm how the right to privacy, everybody's privacy, but especially the privacy of women in their doctor's office, is paramount. Let's take a break. OBGYN Dr. Kristen Lyerly will join me next. We'll talk a bit about the 1849 abortion ban lawsuit that gets started in a Wisconsin courtroom this week. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
It's going to be a busy week this week in Wisconsin, including in a Dane County courtroom where the state's 1849 abortion ban will be brought up. It is a lawsuit brought by State Attorney General Josh Call, but does have other interested parties as well, some of them known as interveners. I believe one of them is also known as an OBGYN, an unrelenting warrior. That would be Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's with us as well. Good morning. How are you? Should I have played a Christmas song instead of a fight song for you over there?
Yeah, it does look like Christmas outside this morning.
Did you really say did you say a couple inches maybe already out there?
It's at least an inch. It's beautiful and fluffy. I mean, we know it's going to go away, so it is really pretty.
No, I think it might have finally broken some people. I think they might just have curled up into a ball and said, not going to do it today. It certainly
happy
felt that.
Happy
May, everybody. Happy May. It was so gross yesterday here. I mean, just the sleet, you know, the cold rain all day, and the wind was just howling the whole day long. It was just so gross. I really wanted to be outside and be getting some of the yard work started, but there was just no way yesterday.
Mm-mm. You have to pick your days, and yesterday was not the day.
And unfortunately, you know, when it was slightly better on Saturday, we were tied up with various things. I went up to Rice Lake to go visit some folks, and our friend Kirk Bangsted was speaking at the 7th Congressional District Convention. You were at the 8th Congressional District Democratic Convention in Sturgeon Bay?
Sturgeon Bay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, it wasn't that much prettier on Saturday up here for us.
Yeah, that's true. The 7th Congressional District included a candidate has emerged, at least the first candidate, perhaps, to take on Congressman Tom Tiffany. His name is Kyle Kilborn, and so he introduced himself to the crowd. So there's at least one person there. And then, you know, there were also former state senator Janet Bewley. Uh-oh, did my internet skip out for a second there? Are you back?
Yeah, it skipped out.
I'm sorry about that. No, that's okay. I was just asking, tell us what the environment was like in the 8th Congressional District Democratic Convention over the weekend.
Well, we didn't have a candidate, although there are a few folks who are considering it. Mm-hmm. But Josh Call was there, and he was in good spirits as this big case is approaching this week, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that later. Lots of enthusiasm and excitement. It really feels like the tide is changing and people have hope. And man, that feels so good.
there is that. I will grant you there's hope. But the whole point of where I spent the last segment, going state by state over good or bad things that had happened, was that there is no room for error when it comes to complacency. And I heard the same thing in Rice Lake over the weekend, that people said, look, we are engaged. We are plugged in. Some of them got new people to join them to maybe even sign up for the state Democratic convention, which is going to be out in your neck of the woods in Green Bay. What is that? I think second week of June. if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, it's about engagement, staying engaged.
Yes. And one thing that I thought was really optimistic and bright was people stepping up to say, I'm interested in running for the city council seat, or I'm exploring this county board position, and talking about the potential. I mean, some of the state seats, we've got a goal in the 8th to have all of our seats have a name on the ballot. And we haven't had that. Like, we've had a third of our seats that have gone completely unchallenged in the last cycle. Part of that was a function of the changing maps and some of the confusion that that created. But here we are, 18 months before fall of 2024 elections, and people are already committing to not only stepping up and putting their names on the ballot, but also committing to teams, committing to growing, recognizing that being a candidate just isn't like being a sacrificial lamb, but it's actually about building community, and you need a community around you in order to be successful. So I really enjoyed those conversations and the fact that people were recognizing that this is something that we all can do when we feel inspired. We all have something to offer here.
It's so true. And again, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to be the candidate, though. Of course, there's always people, you know, who step up and run for the first time for something at the local level, legislature, whatever, but also just supporting those people, you know, makes a big difference. If you're that person, you know, driving them around as they knock doors, or, you know, helping them make phone calls or writing postcards, whatever the case may be. Yeah, there's always room for more engagement. Now, a lot of folks are going to be engaged this week in that 1849 abortion ban case. It's a case that has been a little slow in getting going for, I would argue, some technical reasons behind the scenes, but it is getting started now this week in Dane County Circuit Court. And now the way that it is set up, it's no longer a suit against the legislative Republican leadership. It's now a lawsuit against the district attorneys in counties where there had been Planned Parenthood clinics that had to cease performing abortion services. And so they are the parties in this case. But then there are other parties as well, interveners who have some kind of, you know, direct impact based on the results of that. And as you know, that physicians are one of those groups.
I'm an intervener, as are two docs down in Milwaukee.
One who we talked to, Christopher Ford, the emergency medical emergency medicine physician out of Milwaukee, right?
Yeah. And I love that he's on this case because he's not an OBGYN. He doesn't like to deliver babies. That is not his goal, although he's delivered a few.
We joke about that because, again, you being an OB, me being married to an OB, anybody, any doc who's not an OB, they will do whatever it takes. I mean, if somebody pregnant comes into the emergency room, not with a pregnancy issue, but a hangnail, they send that person up to labor and delivery so fast because they don't want to deal with it. So it is important to note that non-OBGYNs, they too see the impact of this very vaguely worded, very, very old abortion ban language.
Well, and it too emphasizes that abortion is not something that's only in the domain of people who are taking care of pregnant people, but it's part of every aspect of healthcare. So ectopic pregnancies, miscarriages are spontaneous abortions. That is the actual medical term for a miscarriage. And they deal with that all the time. So there are lots of issues that cross different specialties. And the other doctor who's an intervener in this case in Milwaukee is a high-risk pregnancy doctor. She sees people who have very complicated pregnancies, often desired pregnancies, where either the fetus or the mom, their health is at risk and they have to make very, very difficult decisions. So these are, all three of us are people who deal with this on a daily basis, who understand what people are going through. And, you know, we were all eager to step up. We want people to understand how complicated this is.
Well, and you're involved not only because of, you know, the healthcare standpoint, but it's physicians who would face criminal prosecutions, physicians who would face prison time?
Yeah, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And all of our, you know, we're the doctors who have stepped up, but there are plenty of other doctors out there who are really worried because they are on the ground and they're just quietly trying to do their jobs. And so they're talking to lawyers. I mean, they're talking to lawyers before they're providing care to their patients to figure out if it's the right legal thing to do when they know in their best medical judgment that it's the right medical thing to do. Is that what you want your doctor to do when your life is in danger and you are making these emergency decisions? Do you want your doctor to pause and call a lawyer to make sure that they're doing the right legal thing so that they can do the right medical thing? I don't think you do. So that's why the three of us have stepped up to make sure that people get that this affects every single one of us, and disproportionately those of us who live in rural areas where family medicine really carries the brunt of all of the medical care in those communities. They take care of everything from delivering babies to managing miscarriages to prescribing your blood pressure medication. And if they don't feel comfortable or supported working in those environments, guess what, folks? They're going to go to other places where they do feel like they can practice medicine safely and without the risk of going to jail for taking care of you.
Oh, there's some, and we're going to get into more of this with attorney Diane Welsh an hour from now, and you'll be back with her as well. And we'll get even more into the intervener aspect of it, but also the arguments. What exactly is going to be argued about the abortion law? Everything from its vague language, from what was written in 1849, how do you apply it today? We'll get into that. We'll get into whether a law that was passed in 1985 actually supersedes the 1849 ban and should be put back into effect. We also saw, Kristen, in a couple of states now, most recently we mentioned Florida. Florida has a right to privacy in the Constitution. And I can't recall now if it was Wyoming or Montana, but they too have privacy language that may negate any kind of abortion ban. Because again, the whole notion of Roe v. Wade was rooted in the right to privacy. And then this right-wing Supreme Court, these six right-wing justices, threw that out, said there is no right to privacy, only because it doesn't explicitly say it. But I don't know how you don't understand that privacy is a real freedom we have in this country, especially between a patient and doctor.
Yeah, it sure is. And it was Wyoming. And I think they put it in their constitution during a time when Obamacare was being implemented in order to protect people from some of the different pieces of Obamacare that were threatening. You probably know more about that than I do, Pat.
It was just to say that, you know, the government can't get involved, which, again, the government wasn't going to. It was about helping provide better access. But you had people saying, well, government's going to be making decisions, so we need this. And I hold in my hand a piece of paper that I just found called the Wyoming Amendment. Somebody in Rice Lake over the weekend slipped this to me and said, we need to fight to get this in our Constitution. And all of what, it's a very simple line that's in the Wyoming Constitution. Each competent adult shall have the right to make his or her own health care decisions. That's it. That's all it
ding,
says.
Ding, 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 ding. That should be in every constitution everywhere.
Mm-hmm. It should.
Yes.
Again, the things that where we were dependent, we trusted state Supreme Courts. We trusted them that the reason that the right of same-sex couples to marry still didn't get passed until just a few months ago was because the Obergefell decision in 2015, you know, people thought that that would always be the law. But now we don't know if it will, because if they can throw out Roe v. Wade after 49 years, so you got to codify abortion rights, as you know, just happened in Minnesota. We're going to have to codify the right to privacy and explicitly state it in there, because as courts have become more political, we just realized they become less trustworthy. And that's unfortunate.
And exhausting.
It's just exhausting. But wrap things up here by saying, again, you had that sense of hope being in St. Paul for the signing of those bills by Governor Walz the other day.
Oh, it was so exciting. So I got to go to St. Paul and stand behind the governor as he signed a trans refuge bill and a bill that bans conversion therapy, and a bill that creates a safe place for people who are seeking and providing care in Minnesota so they can't be prosecuted when they go back to their home states. And it was just such an honor for me as somebody who's practicing in Minnesota to be that example of someone who they said, you know, we're creating a place for people to come and live, not just for providers and people seeking care, but also we're creating a childcare that's affordable, and we're encouraging people to come and enjoy some of the economic advantages that we have here. Like, they really are attracting people, and it's so unfortunate because we're pushing people in that direction.
Oh yeah. Meanwhile, you've got Governor Tim Walz, who is not backing down one bit, you know, who's saying, look, this is who we are. This is what we stand for in Minnesota. He said, we're carving out a corner of our country where no child is left hungry, no community is left behind, and nobody gets told they don't belong. And you really can't get it more basic than that, is to respect people's human rights. All right, we'll take a break. We'll have a little music break and today's history lesson all coming up. And of course, a noted Green Bay resident sports expert, Kristen Lyerly, will weigh the Packers draft picks as well. Coming up after this, here up north. Made my skin a little bit thicker. It makes me that much smarter. Thanks for making me a fighter.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
I didn't want to play the very end of it because he gets down so deep with the I walk the line. I was afraid my voice would squeak if I tried to do that. Johnny Cash
added
released
to the karaoke list.
And Johnny Cash released I Walk the Line on this day in 1956. It was a pledge of fidelity to his first wife. Emphasis on first. Wife. Because once the song became a hit, Cash found it much harder to be true when he struck up an affair with June Carter, whom he would later marry. In that same... In that same vein, 1967, Elvis Presley and Priscilla Beaulieu are married in a private ceremony at the Aladdin Hotel in Vegas. And on this day in 2019, Joe Jonas of the Jonas Brothers marries Game of Thrones star Sophie Turner in Las Vegas, where an Elvis impersonator officiates. She legally changes her name to Jonas, and the two have two young daughters and are still together to this day. So who knew there would be such an Elvis tie-in with today's marriages in history? Honestly,
well,
who still gets married with an Elvis later? I don't know.
It's got to be easy.
All right. We got several musicians with birthdays today. So I'm going to throw a whole bunch of music clips at you in short order. Let's go from oldest to youngest. Happy 84th birthday to Judy Collins.
Goes and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air.
That's still one of my favorite little light rock ditties, Both Sides Now. She also gave us Send in the Clowns. And she does just an angelic rendition of Amazing Grace. So definitely one of my favorites.
Very sweet.
78 years old today. Happy 78th birthday to Rita Coolidge, who won a couple of Grammy Awards. Rita Coolidge won those Grammys with her then husband, Kris Kristofferson, alongside her. She also had a light rock version of the Motown hit, Your Love Keeps Lifting Me Higher and Higher, We're All Alone, I'd Rather Leave While I'm in Love, and the theme song for the 1983 James Bond film Octopussy, All Time High was the name of that theme song. It is a birthday for Ray Parker Jr., 69 years old today. Again, he had a couple of nice hits, and then he went and did the Ghostbusters theme.
Oh, tell me about it. That was my high school mascot. We were the ghosts during the Ghostbuster era, and that was a really hard time for us, Pat.
Why is that?
because every pep band played Ghostbusters and we were tired of it. We got real tired of it.
Well, what you should have played then was the Huey Lewis and the News tune, I Want a New Drug, because Ray Parker Jr. basically got convicted of plagiarism, saying that the Ghostbusters theme was ripped off from the Huey Lewis song. So you could have changed it up a little bit, you know.
Too much thinking. There's
yeah, I know.
Just too much
don't overthink pep band, Pat. And finally, a birthday today for country superstar Tim McGraw. He is 56 years old today.
Did he sing in this time?
He does, and I think I probably should have queued this up, perhaps, to where Tim McGraw is actually doing some of the singing. I now know I was originally teeing this up to be bumper music. But, oh, look, here's Tim now.
They disappear to the left and right again.
And of course, they have, again, one of those superstar marriages to Faith Hill. And again, you know, hopefully things continue to go well, but they show every sign of actually living up to that phrase, happily ever after. So good on them. It's also the birthday for director Wes Anderson. He would be 54 years old today. Aaron, I'm going to have to bring you in on this one because I am not a Wes Anderson aficionado. I know I tried to look up maybe a couple of his movies, but I thought you might be better versed in the life and career of that esteemed director.
I've seen a few, not all of them, but I know one of my favorites is Fantastic Mr. Fox, because I love stop motion animation, and that movie does a fantastic job with it, and the characters have such amazingly like tangible personalities and everything. I definitely recommend it. It's like a heist movie.
Nice.
If you haven't seen it.
His style is quirky.
Yeah, I recall seeing on either on TikTok or Instagram someplace, somebody redid a video in the style of Wes Anderson, and it was really funny. So yeah, apparently he's very easy to, you know, to recognize. The number one song on this day in 1976 was from the Bellamy Brothers. Every one of these, I feel like I should be a DJ just talking up the ramp here.
For the sunshine.
This, of course, would be Let Your Love Flow, the number one song this day in 1976. On this day in 1931, the Empire State Building was dedicated in New York City. In 2003, in what became known as the Mission Accomplished speech on board the USS Abraham Lincoln, President George W. Bush declared that, quote, major combat operations in Iraq have ended. Narrator, they had not, in fact, ended. To the Up North News newsletter, on this day 3 years ago in 2020, on a day when Wisconsin once again saw its biggest single-day jump in COVID cases, business leaders told a legislative committee in the Capitol about their desire to move faster into reopening stores, restaurants, and factories, while outside the Capitol building, nurses described how moving too quickly to lift restrictions is likely to endanger many more people. Narrator, it did, in fact, endanger many more people as we rushed to reopen businesses.
I'm just shaking my head over here.
It's just like, what? Yeah, there was a lot of head shaking. I mean, back then, especially 2 years ago, Senator Ron Johnson confirmed to the Washington Post that he had received what's known as a defensive briefing from the FBI the previous year that cautioned him Russia was actively interfering in the U.S. presidential election by using Ukrainian proxies to smear candidate Joe Biden with false information. Johnson told the Washington Post he disregarded the warning because he said it was useless and suspected it was part of a campaign to smear him, though it's really not clear why the FBI would want to smear Ron Johnson, a Wisconsin member of Congress. But, you know, you'll believe whatever the voices in your head tell you. And
it's
on this day,
very important.
Yeah, this day 1 year ago, Tim Michaels was a new candidate for governor and the target of a lengthy article by a conservative news site looking into his multiple residences using hard-to-trace LLC paperwork. He lived in two different Connecticut mansions, a penthouse near Park Avenue in Manhattan, and all six of Michaels' children attended and graduated from high schools in the region. Even as Michaels said he voted by mail, in Wisconsin elections. There was more drama to come. Kristen, you going to rejoin us at 7:30 then with Diane Welsh?
I'm going to do my best.
All right. Hope to see you then. Take a news break. And Senator Jeff Smith next. You're up north.